When the praises go up, the blessings come down.
Return of the Prayer to God children.
When the praises go up,
good Lord,
the blessings come down.
It seems like
blessings keep falling in my lap. Ifatu, brother, how you doing?
I'm okay, man. I'm alive. Thank God.
We thank God for life.
I can see you're in high spirit.
Nah, man, I'm just, you know, chilling. You know,
today's episode, I don't plan to talk too much, please. I am in a somber mood for me in general. Nobody should stress me with plenty questions today.
Seems like blessings keep falling in my lap.
You know, deep down, I really wanted United to win for just balance.
Of course, you wanted United to win for your selfish reasons.
Yeah, man, that's no surprise.
That's okay. But yeah, exactly. No one was surprised by that. It's like, it was just very damning, like how clear the difference in levels are between Manchester United and City.
Bro, it felt like City did not leave third game.
I don't even know where to start.
Yeah,
we cannot transition the ball. We cannot transition the ball from even defense to midfield. To attack.
As a United fan, I know says United does not have a midfielder that doesn't treat the ball like a bomb. Everybody, Casemiro, McTominay, Bruno Fernandes, Mason Mount. The only one that can sort of not treat it like a bomb, Eriksen, is on his last legs. So sad to
I thought Eriksen was quite poor today.
The United team was poor, man. The buy is on the ground.
Eriksen was not poor. Game. Eriksen was the best player for me.
Actually, I thought Onana was your best player.
Except Onana this one's the first performances out of him. But I'm talking about the best outfield player.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I don't know. Front to back, the team's way. Actually, I really liked Hoyland, but the man's been feeding off scraps. I can't have a front.
Sorry, what was there to like?
He's a guy that's entering my eye. I can't explain it. It's like he's doing the right things, but United as an institution is holding his destiny.
Wow. Harsh.
From the amount of times I've seen United play ball, and I've looked at Hoyland and I've been like, bro, in a better team, you're banging at least 5 goals by now in the league.
At Arsenal, he would have banged a couple.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%.
I mean, we'll get to our boy.
Your defense is in trouble. Lingetia in the room.
Man,
Okay.
You guys should be considerate. We're recording this podcast against my will. Let me just tell you now, because I don't know how I'm recording off the back of a United loss and an Arsenal win. A huge United loss and a big Arsenal win. I don't like such situations.
I think that's the standard way these things tend to happen these days, bro.
No, please. That was the problem with your Arsenal fans. You guys are always quick to get ahead of yourselves. You're always so quick.
I'm finding this season quite boring as an Arsenal fan.
You're finding this season boring, are you?
Yeah, man.
Okay. I don't blame you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to another episode of Three in a Row. We are back. I think this time it's been 4 weeks since we last spoke, but we're excited to be here. Obviously, a lot has happened in the world of football, and we'll try and take you through all of that, but also make this episode a little bit more interesting. We're going to have some Saturday social style true or false questions that I will mediate for Damola and Ifatu, and they're gonna have some fun answering those for you. Guys, check in. Ifatu, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, guys. It's been a very bumpy last few weeks in terms of football happenings. My club has not given me too much joy. But yeah, my passion for the sport of football keeps me interested. So yeah, let's have it. Tamala, what are you saying, bro?
Yeah, it's been a good weekend for ball. I spent most of the weekend watching ball, playing Spider-Man. It's been raining.
New Spider-Man?
Yeah, the new Spider-Man, man. I wanted to do it. That was my initial plan for last weekend, but I had to travel to DC for something. But all in all, it's been a good weekend. I've been all right. I have my occasional gripes with Arsenal, but they are still on the right track.
Don't talk about gripes, please. Don't piss me off, bro.
I mean, yeah, fair. Still.
You don't mind. Yeah,
yeah, that's fair.
Talk, you know why people don't ask you how you're doing? Because you always look like you're doing great.
You know what you mean? It's not that, right? It's just like Tokwe is chopping life for the rest of us that cannot chop life at this very present moment. Tokwe, would you like to tell the viewers where you've been recently?
What have I been doing recently? I just got back from Bali, Indonesia, after probably two of the best weeks ever of my short life so far. Thank God. Yeah, life is good, man. Bali is sick. I recommend everybody to go there. There's not enough black people there, so we need to kind of fix that. It's untapped land, untapped potential. But yeah, I've just been away for a while, resetting my mind, you know, body, spirit, all of that. Great times.
Back in London now.
It's cold. What did I do this weekend? I was at Thorpe Park doing Fright Night. So yeah, first time being in like a, what do you call those, amusement park? Thrill park, in the dark, going on some roller coasters and mazes and blah blah blah, and obviously, you know, celebrating Eddie's wonderful hat trick. So yeah, it was a great weekend.
Is there a reason you didn't try to go watch the game this weekend?
As in the stadium?
Yeah.
I mean, my pocket, my money.
Oh, my bad. You finished chopping life.
I thought you have like tickets.
It's not every game that tickets I can go to now. I've been to like four or five this season. And after a while, it adds up, man. So I'm okay. Maybe one more before the end of the year I'll try and go to, but that's it. Also, the team is not really actually gingering me this season, funny enough. It's not. I don't find this season as exciting.
Attacking football is different from last season. So I hear that.
It's kind of boring still.
Yeah, the vibe is different this season compared to last season. So,
But it's Sunday. And before we get into our questions that we have for you guys, I'll be the moderator. Let's talk about the football that we've just witnessed while it's fresh in our minds. And today, that was Man City versus United. City won 3-0. Obviously, no surprises about the results. Ifatu, did you learn anything more about your team after this game?
Yes, I learned that we're not going forward. I was very disappointed with the approach from players. So it's one thing to not be able to, you know, to not have the skill set to achieve a certain goal. And it's another thing entirely to just not want to do it at all, to not, you know, be motivated to do it. And I kind of like, that's what I see in these players. I see that they are just like, they are confused. They don't know what to do. They are not properly instructed, or the instructions are not clear, or there are some confusionists in the squad. I can't quite put my finger on it, but as a team, as a collective, Manchester United look all over the place. They look like they don't know what they're doing, or they don't know how to achieve what they want to achieve, which is obviously to put the ball in the back of the net. But they don't know how to get there. even when they find themselves in positions where they could do the simple things and, you know, get a good chance on goal, you know, you can see the confusion. You can feel the confusion. You can see that A does not know what to do because B and C is not doing what else. You know, there's just no synergy in the squad. Whereas Manchester City, it's the complete opposite. They know exactly where to be at, what, you know, when to be, you know, what runs to make, you know, how to attack the ball, how to stay back, how to maintain energy levels. They know exactly. They are well trained. And yeah, it's very sad, but yeah, the scoreline 3-0 low-key flattered Manchester United. It could have been 5 or 6. Onana is confident, he's on form, but you never want to hear that your goalkeeper is the man of the match. Your goalkeeper is who is keeping your team afloat. So that just shows how bad things are, really. Personally, I've lost motivation. You know, you want to feel like you have a chance of winning the league. You want to feel like you have a chance of like celebrating something at the end of the season. And right now, it's not looking like we can do anything at all. Like, there's no chance of... We don't just look like a team that's going to be successful. So, yeah.
Maybe you're still in the Carling Cup. Maybe you can...
Yeah, I think we're still in all the cups. We're still in all the cups. We've not been knocked out of anything. Right now, but that doesn't mean much to me, honestly. If we are struggling the way we struggled against Copenhagen in the Champions League, we are struggling the way we struggled to beat Sheffield in the Premier League, and then we come up against Manchester City at Old Trafford, and they just 3-0 blatant whitewash, disrespectful stuff. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. Not looking good at all. Not looking good, bro.
Fun times. I think, to be honest, you're right. There isn't much to say or to be learned from this game. It felt like exactly what everybody expected based on how the performances have gone for both teams, I guess, recently. City have always City. And United have just sucked all season. Even when they have won games, it hasn't been convincing, right? So, I mean, we'll get into United, I think, a little bit later when we go into the questions. I want to bring you in here, Damola, because there was another big game that happened this weekend. And it was, of course, El Clasico. Jude Bellingham put on another masterful performance. What was your read from the game?
That Barcelona need to figure stuff out. I don't know. It's in the first half, they had almost like total dominance of the game. I played like that and they played with a certain authority. You could see at the end of that first half, the only thing they were going to be regretting is they didn't get a second. Then came the second half. They started it very well. But then Jude scores a cracker from outside the box. That changes the dynamic of the game a bit. It becomes a bit more back and forth. Xavi's subs didn't do much, whereas Ancelotti's subs played in parts with Modric coming on and getting the assist for Jude's winner. So all in all, my take was Madrid gonna Madrid. Jude Bellingham is a very special lad. And Barcelona needs to figure stuff out. I think there was something interesting I saw that Gundogan said post the game that the dressing room wasn't angry enough with the loss, which is to me a very damning statement to make. So, yeah, but shout out to Madrid, man. You could say they didn't deserve it, but they came out of Barcelona with the win. And you got to appreciate a winner's mindset.
Barca had a lot of injuries, though, I would say, in Xavi's defense. Like, Lewy just came back from injury. He wasn't fully fit to start. Neither was Rafinha. Pedri is injured. De Jong is injured. Sergio Roberto is injured. So I felt bad for Barcelona a little bit because they were really hampered by injury going into the game. And I still think they have a better chance of finishing above or top of the league than Madrid this season. That's my own take, Sha. and read of the La Liga. And obviously, there's no words for Jude Bellingham. No words for the best on earth.
Maybe. I think I'm just... Traditionally, there are not a lot of British players, bar Gareth Bale, that's going to Spain and are absolutely killing it the way Bellingham has. His numbers, I know, like, everyone appreciated his quality as a midfielder from his time at Dortmund and what we had seen him do with England. But this goal-scoring ability, late runs into the box, is something I'm not sure I knew he was this good at pre him getting to Madrid. And shout out to Ancelotti. Ancelotti has put in a system in place to get the most out of him. Despite an orthodox number nine playing most of the time. So
he's unlocked him.
Yeah, exactly. So it's he's someone that, shout to the people around him, they've made good decisions. And shout to the team he's at, they're also making good decisions to get the most of him. And I think Madrid is going to be sorted out for a very, very long time if he continues playing at this level.
Interesting. It's definitely exciting to watch this space. I guess we should get to some small bits and pieces of news before we go into truth or false, which will help us cover a lot in the world of football, across the world of football, let's say, and also dig deeper into what you guys think about certain things. But, I mean, Sandro Tonali was banned for 10 months for gambling. Another one bites the dust. And I think Zaniolo is being investigated as well. Does football have a problem or something? Like, what's going on?
Gambling is a very, very addictive tendency. It's a very addictive, and I think that... Why are you laughing? And I feel like there's a lot more that is going on behind the scenes that we are currently oblivious to. If Tonali's investigation as a ripple effect has now touched Zaniolo, and I think there's one other person in a different club that has now gone and confessed his own crimes, I think in Juventus. They should now go and investigate everybody in the entire league. Let them go on.
Yes,
because there's the thing, especially the lower the championship clubs, the lower leagues, those guys make a lot less money than the Premier League footballers, for example. And in those kinds of scenarios, betting becomes a considerably more profitable endeavor than just earning your weekly wage or your monthly, whatever stipend you're being paid to play football. They definitely need to look much, much, much deeper into everybody involved. If it's something that they are, something the FA truly wants to eradicate from football, then they have to be very, very, very delicate with the approach to it. But yes, you should not be. I mean, it basically compromises the integrity of the sport if the people that are supposed to be defending the integrity are betting on it. So, not good at all. So, any consequences, I think I fully support it.
The thing about the consequences for betting is, I get it, but betting is so prevalent in football, in sponsorships, and things like that, that you have players who have genuine addictions. It's almost hypocritical that the FA supports it, or their respective football associations support betting. Their respective clubs are sponsored by betting companies, but they are the ones that can't participate in it. You could say, okay, they shouldn't bet on their games, but I believe the rules are more stringent where they shouldn't even bet at all.
So the problem I see with that is easily, for example, if I am, let's say I'm Sturridge, for example, and I know a couple of players in the championship teams, I can tell them, come here, boy, you know what, I'm not allowed to bet on my club, but I can bet on yours, so do XYZ, this is how much I intend to, you know, make, and this is your cut. If you can get a yellow card before the 31st minute, for example, you know,
and well, you start having that people. They're good at actually. These betting companies are good at noticing patterns like this. I know there's somebody in Brazil or a Brazilian guy, I don't remember who now, that's being investigated as well because I think he got like two yellow cards or like in two consecutive, something to do with yellow cards, just as you've described.
Lucas Paqueta.
Yeah, and then they noticed the surge in betting for that particular incident within the region in Brazil. So it's not as easy as it looks, I would say. But my own thing with the addiction is that it's different when you say you're addicted to alcohol, because at least I don't know, it's legal for you to drink after a certain age. If you're a footballer, it was never okay for you to bet, period. Never. But it has always been against law. So I don't know how much law breaking you had to do to reach the point of addiction to then be coming to tell me a story about, oh, I'm addicted to betting, blah, blah. Well, brother, you know, either way, you're going to have to deal with that addiction in your ban, in your time off. So That's why I say
it needs to be treated like a pandemic, you know, because, for example, a lot of these players might not have to even deal with betting if they were not introduced to it in the first place, or if someone didn't show them that you can do XYZ in the world of betting, you know. That's why I think they need to look at it more of as a pandemic and try to find out who else has been infiltrated, who else has been, you know, compromised and is, you know, low key, the lowest of keys betting. You know, they have to do that. You know, because all it takes is for you to see. You know, there are a lot of things about betting that people don't even realize. Betting is sometimes, apart from the element of making money, it's just, there's an entertaining aspect of it. There's a fun aspect of it. There's a hand, you know, heart in my mouth aspect of it. Oh, let me see what the outcome is going to be. Am I right? Yeah. Am I wrong? Let's see.
It also gives people an adrenaline rush.
Yes. You know, so you feel it once or twice. For a footballer that doesn't have too many options to entertain yourself, you find one option where you can just, you know, without, you know, literally just sat somewhere and there's nobody suspecting you of anything. You know, I feel like there's quite a number of people that are doing it underground that the FA are still unaware of.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more prevalent than people may want to admit to, I guess, because it's just a bad look if you said something like, oh, 50% of footballers bet somehow. Maybe not on their games, but the games around them.
Yes, yes. You know, I worked at Manchester United, and when I was there, just as normal staff, you sign a contract that you're not allowed to bet at all. You know, you're not allowed to bet at all. You know, so I think if they're doing that to their ground staff, to their, you know, I think they are trying as hard as they can. I think the policies, the systems that have been put in place, are trying as hard as possible to discourage the act of betting, but it is what it is.
Yeah, man. It's fun, champ. Or it's not fun, but it's...
No, well, I said it's fun.
It's not fun. It's not fun, but it's like... I guess what I'm trying to say is it's interesting. I think I have, other than the fact that, you know, I do think it's hard not to, notice the difference in the way the Tonali case is being treated in the media versus the case with Ivan Toney.
Yeah.
And that could be just because maybe, you know, Toney was a scapegoat, so Tonali and his team got ahead of it from a media standpoint. And they managed the conversation in a way that also probably helps reduce the punishment he may have been given.
Can we compare Tonali's punishment with Ivan Toney's punishment? Because Tonali is getting how many months, I beg?
He's getting 10 months, but in those 10 months, he can still train.
Okay, and then what about Ivan Toney? What was Ivan Toney's one?
Toney couldn't train for a while. It's only recently he was allowed to start trading again.
What about the length of the ban? Is it more or less than 10 months?
It's more. I think it was 18, if not. I need to double check. I'm not 100% sure.
No, I think it's not supposed to come back in January.
Let me see. I haven't
told. He was banned for 8 months, not 18.
Oh, my bad. Okay, that's wrong.
Yeah. Okay, so he's still coming back sometime, maybe not January, sure, but like next this season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Towards the end. In some other tidbits of information, Lyon's boss was just attacked by Marseille fans, and Fabio Grosso is severely injured. So thoughts and prayers to them. Maybe that will give them the kick up they asked they need to actually start performing this season, because it's quite embarrassing. Not going to lie, they're last on the table. So is Ajax, by the way. Have you guys seen how badly Ajax have been doing this season?
They sacked their manager and still lost 5-2 to PSV.
Yeah. Their fans also destroyed the stadium not too long ago in protest as well. But everything in this...
I wonder, you know, how things have gotten so bad over there, though. Maybe a certain manager that was keeping things together, you know, it's no longer dead.
Oh, gosh. Or maybe a certain manager was low-key eroding the club and, you know... as soon as he left, he left because he knew he had to leave, type vibe. Who knows? I mean, we need a movie on that one. It seems pretty interesting. Before the next episode, I'll try and read more on what's going on there. Let's talk about Spurs and then get into some questions. Or let's get into some questions, but make the first one related to Spurs. How about that? It's going to be a game of truth or false, and it's Ifatu versus Damola. We're trying out a new format just to see if it works. I'm going to ask a series of questions, lads, and I'm going to then ask you to say truth or false to your statements and explain, and I will reward points to the winner. And
how are you going to tell the winner?
Well, it would just be my unbiased judgment of your argument. Yeah. Not of my
the unbiased my judgment of the Arsenal fanatic.
Oh my god. I'll be focusing on your argument, not on my belief of the point itself.
All right, fair enough. Let's argue
the best case. We're just gonna do a couple now to get a feel for it, and then we'll be back with more. Are we clear?
Yeah,
Krista.
Okay. I don't know how we just. I guess you just say true or false, and we'll take it from there. So, first question or first statement: Erik ten Hag is the right man for the United job.
Who's starting? Me.
True or false?
True.
Damola, what do you say?
I will only say true because I don't know who can replace him.
Wow. So you guys are both in agreement. That's a horrible start. Somebody explain why Ten Hag is the right man for the job, because I'm starting to feel otherwise.
I think we've spoken a couple of times about the variety of issues United upper management presents a coach. And I think for a large portion of the season, they've not made it easy for Ten Hag in any way. So we've gone through cycles of United managers. We've done nostalgia in Ole. We've done world-renowned in Mourinho. We've done another world-renowned in Van Gaal. And the results always appears to be the same. That tells me there's something wrong with United as an institution that rushing to fire the coach now will not solve. So, till that is sorted out, I still think he's the right man for the job. That being said, if they fall lower in the table and have zero hope of making the Champions League, then, you know, if I'm a United fan, despite me thinking ownership is the fault, I still will believe something has to change sooner rather than later.
When they fall. not if.
Hey man, I try not to. It's bad looks. It's bad looks to kick somebody when they're down. So
I don't mind kicking United while they're down because they kicked us not for a very long time.
It says the unbiased one.
Hey, that was no argument there. You're both, nobody gets a point. Everybody's in agreement. Ten Hag stays at Manchester United. Next statement. Spurs are title contenders. Truth or false? You can shout out your opinion at any time.
True.
False.
Here we go. Ifatu, why do you say true?
They've started the season with a certain je ne sais quoi as far as all the other clubs are concerned, because no one knows what to expect. They have the X factor going on with the new manager, who has definitely brought in something different. No experience, no prior experience in the Premier League, but where have we seen that before? Mourinho did it, Conte did it. I won't say Ranieri because he was in the Premier League before, but he also did it in his first season with Leicester in the Premier League. So, yeah, why not? They are winning games regardless of, you know, their performances. And I would say overall, their performances are kind of like consistent enough for them to always have a chance. And if they can, you know, get past the bigger teams, I see them definitely competing for the title this season.
Domino, you can jump in. Let us know why he's wrong.
mine is false for a couple of reasons. One, yes, Spurs have improved, but they are still Spurs. But other than that, they are where they are primarily because of their attack. And if there's anything we've seen in this league, is you don't win the league just by having a good attack. Their underlying defensive numbers are, in the long term, are worrying. In the short term, look like maybe they can be fixed. But if they continue the trend, it's worrying. You don't want your keeper having to make some of the most saves in the league. You don't want to have considered as many shots as they have. And basically, in the last like 10 years, all the title-winning teams have had a very solid defense. That being said, I do think they are good enough to be in the top five. They've started well enough. But I'm not exactly sure how long they can keep it lasting. They also have the benefit of the Prem being the only competition they are focused on. They were briefly in Carabao and got injured. And yeah, so I think there's a lot that has gone right for them, but the underlying numbers don't tell me that is title charging numbers. It tells me that is top five numbers, but not title charging.
I think they can smell blood. I think they can smell blood. So why not? You know, they're five. They're 5 points clear of the table. Oh,
two.
Okay, no more. Okay, no more. No more. No more. No more. They were 5 points clear of the table. Okay, so now 2 points. Cool. Let's go.
Okay. Based on the argument, I'll give that one to Damola. He got me with the top five case and the good pointers on, yeah, defensive performances. But I personally definitely think Spurs are, like, could become title contenders. They have like that Ted Lasso effect going on with Ange, which is quite scary.
I will say this though. At the moment, they are having a bit of a benefit from the fact that people still allow Spurs play. They are not facing many low blocks and nasty defensive line. I wonder if or how much their offense will change if they start seeing more of that as the season progresses.
That's Chelsea's problem right now, isn't it? Everybody plays them as a big team. They just can't break anyone down. But yes, let's go to the next question or the next statement. Chelsea will win the Premier League before Arsenal do. True or false?
False. If at all, I assume you're quiet because your answer is also false.
Yes, I would love to say the answer is true if I'm being honest, but yeah, I cannot.
So you wanted to say true for banter, but not that you believe it.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's very interesting. We have another agreement. I mean, for devil's advocates, what I'm hearing a lot is that it's basically the idea that the Arsenal team as it currently is plateauing and will not be good enough to beat City anytime in the near future, while the Chelsea team is building towards something that probably means most likely they have a chance to actually get.
How are the Arsenal team plateauing?
Hey, but if you look at the pieces that the Arsenal team has, what Arteta has done, it could be that last season's as good as it gets.
No, I disagree. I think, so that we don't start sounding like an Arsenal podcast, I think what is happening is Arteta was scarred by some of the defeats we had in the title running. And whereas, yes, we're good offensively and the ball was free flowing and things like that, there were a number of times where it just looked a bit too easy to get us on transition or with certain types of balls. City exploited that. In the game, we played them at the Etihad. They caught us in transition twice at Emirates. And the way the team has been shaped is to counter that. It does mean we're not attacking as fluently at the moment because we're trying to figure out stuff with our left-hand side. Also, Odegaard has been a tad bit off. But while I think point or games-wise, if you like, match up our current run with the run same teams we played last season, we're better off now than we were last season. That's the first one. The second thing is we also haven't had like our front three fit for two consecutive games. They were fit for one game, Sevilla, and Jesus got injured, which is, I think, is also a contributing factor. So we've had a not so easy start to the season, fixture list-wise. We've played Spurs, Chelsea, City, United. The only people we haven't really played are Newcastle and Liverpool. So
Newcastle next week.
Newcastle next week, exactly. So we've had a sort of tough start to the season. Yes, there's a bit of a gap in the attacking fluency we had compared to last season, but the team's underlying numbers look good and we've been missing key players. And also, let's not forget, teams are playing us way deeper than they were last season. I saw a metric of like the average opposition defense line, and Arsenal has faced one of the lowest blocks in Europe's top five leagues this season. So it's a combination of things. I do think we will kick into gear closer to January, and we will look like a better attacking outfit. So I am not saying we've plateaued. I just think there's another phase of learning going on right now.
Interesting. I think that's very well said. Okay. Next couple of statements to round us up today. It's going to be a short one. Jude Bellingham is a better player than Erling Haaland. True or false?
Jude Bellingham.
Yes.
It's a better player than Erling Haaland.
True or false?
False, please.
This is at the moment or like on current form?
Better player, full stop.
False.
Oh.
Yeah, I can't say true to that. As good as Jude Bellingham has been recently, and he's been amazing, what Haaland has shown in the last year is nothing short of sensational. I think like a lot of, and it may be just like with the changing times, a lot of conversation and work has gone about talking about things in football other than putting the ball in the back of the net recently. And nobody's saying that's not extremely important, but we should not now underestimate the importance of having somebody who can put the ball in the net with the high volume that Erling Haaland does. They are not, he's one of one when it comes to that, putting the ball in the net. There's nobody better at him than that. You could say you don't like his all-round play, which is fair, but in the job he's been given, he's the best there is at it. So, and using that metric, he's I would say he's way better, but he's definitely better than Jude.
If that's, I guess you feel the same.
Oh, yes. 100%. I agree with Damola. I don't want to repeat what he's saying, but yes, basically, Haaland is the best in the world at what he does. He's a specialist at what he does. Jude Bellingham is more of a jack of all trades, kind of. He's trying to master striking. I don't know why he has 10 La Liga goals right now. But yeah, ultimately, I cannot see past all Al Haaland has done leading up to this point, because Bellingham is having, an outstanding season with Real Madrid. So, okay. Yeah, definitely Haaland.
All right. Final question from me today. I think I need to make these harder for you guys, is what I'm learning. But true or false, Chelsea have spent £1 billion wisely?
Of course, false.
Massive false. You don't spend £1 billion and are fighting to be top half of the table. They cannot work like that.
What about the fact that they've signed youth and like they have this exciting midfield of Caicedo, Enzo, and Lavia to come, and Cole Palmer, and blah blah blah.
That is going to come with pressure. And they would have to, they would need to learn to manage that pressure. You know, this is not pressure of expectation. The young, talented group has been brought in. And now we are saying, we don't expect you to, hit that world-class form right off the bat. We're going to give you time to get there. And it's now like something hanging over their heads, right? I need to get to this level before I can be considered a success. And yeah, it's always tricky when that kind of thing is hanging over your head. So I don't think it helps really that the world is looking at this young squad of players and saying, maybe not now, but soon. Huh? How soon?
Soon is never. It's just a fallacy. So I agree. I mean, I'll give you guys one more bonus one, because Damola is winning, because there was only one disagreement. Cole Palmer is a better signing than Kai Havertz. True or false?
True.
At the moment, true. It's okay, see, man. I don't know. And maybe it's because we're not losing that I'm still a tad bit optimistic on Kai Havertz. At the same time, yeah, Cole Palmer has been better filling into that right wing slot. Although it's weird because Chelsea bought a lot of players that could do a similar thing, but I feel like Cole Palmer has been the best fit for what Pochettino wants to do. Kai Havertz, it's weird. Arteta at the start of the season was talking about him more as a left central midfielder. But the more I've seen him, he's best when he's playing as a striker for us. As a midfielder, he feels clunky. Like, he's not making a significant contribution to offense. Like, I remember I was happy when he scored the penalty against Bournemouth, but someone made the point. He was like, man, when did Arsenal turn into a Make-A-Wish Foundation? Like, we're giving away penalties because people can't hustle it out in open play. So yeah, it's an easy one. At the moment it's Cole Palmer. In 12 months time, I want to be optimistic and say Havertz, but I can't. So yeah. I still think it will be Cole Palmer, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, Kai Havertz has been a big mistake. Big mistake. Big waste of £60 million.
Yeah, he's been a very expensive. I didn't get the signing when it first happened. I tried to get it in preseason and at the start of the season, and I still don't fully get it with more games that I've seen him play in that position.
Well, on that note, Damola wins this round or this game today. Let us know your thoughts on the format, guys. I will improve my questions. That's all we have for today.
Boo! Oh, before we go, shout out to Sir Bobby Charlton.
Yes.
Our condolences to all United fans that are mourning. And all British fans. He won England the only World Cup. So I'm sure there's a lot of love for him across generations. But also talk about before we go. I was asking you this at before the start of the podcast. What's going on with Sturridge and his dog?
Oh yeah, it was a funny story. I was gonna bring it up and then I decided maybe to leave the man in a sense until proven guilty. But basically somebody is accusing Daniel Sturridge of not paying the ransom that he put up for his dog. So I don't know if you guys remember when Sturridge like lost his dog and he put it up on social media and he offered like a heavy, like, you know, ransom for anybody who could find the dog or give information towards the location.
Yeah, I remember.
Apparently Sturridge not pay. And obviously the dog was found. So now he's being sued for like 30 grand or something more. Or even more, by somebody who claims to have found the dog. And I say claims because I read a little bit more into it, and Sturridge is saying that he already paid someone.
All right.
Oh, wow. So the Sturridge paid the wrong person from what you read, or is a lot of TBD?
It's he said, she said, right? So,
yeah, some guy is just claiming he's the one. Yeah, yeah. I think I get it now.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, thank God you said that one to talk about, because I was going to make an ignorant comment about how Sturridge probably did that shit. Like, I would believe that. Sturridge looks like you do that shit. You know, because I remember when that dog was missing, and I remember when he put out a video on Instagram talking about, please, my dog. He was almost crying. It was like one of them sad and emotional videos about, I really need my dog. Anyone, you know, that finds my dog, I'll give him XYZ. And you know, eventually found his dog.
But we didn't see anybody. We didn't check.
Yeah, we didn't see the settlement of that piece. So obviously, now it's come back to light. I don't know. Let them sort out their stuff, I beg.
Word.
I want to believe that Sturridge made enough money to be able to pay anybody 20 or 30,000 pounds, you know.
Me too.
And public embarrassment.
I mean, yeah, but how long ago has it been since Sturridge was playing top flight? Am I top flight? Let's just assume for now, I'm saying Europe top five leagues. It's been a while. So
this dog thing happened like maybe 1 or 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So 30 grand is not a small money 1 or 2 years ago, to the best of my knowledge.
I feel like 30 grand is smaller 2 years ago than it is now for Daniel Sturridge.
You know what?
He's got that sky bag now, you feel me?
Yeah, but sky bag really paying him 30 grand issue.
Skybag is not that big.
Exactly.
It's bigger than my own current bag, so I can't lie.
Yeah, yeah. One day it's your bag 30, will it's be not 30 bigger grand than big. One day your bag will be bigger than the skybag.
Soon come. Soon come. Amen. And I guess on that note, enjoy this episode, lads, or ladies and gentlemen. I pray for world peace. I'll, as I always say, enjoy today, enjoy forever.
No gap, my cutting quote for us. Then, bro, I was really looking forward to that.
You got me. You got me. As Gab Marcotti says, I forgot what he says though. Love your neighbor, love yourself, love the game.
All right, thank you everyone. Take it easy.
Amen. All right, man.
Bye. Yeah,
just have spent 1 million pounds. Well, the guy Rice has been the PSA of the season. Man, fuck Declan Rice.
Pull Declan Rice.
Whoa.
I need them to start saying that in the stadium. Do like Declan Rice.
Anytime I come,
I go kick them to the curb. Smack them.
Even in the stunner. I think the funniest one for me was over the week. I was watching the highlights of Man U Copenhagen, and I saw that Henrik Larsen has retired, had a kid who is old enough to miss penalty in the Champions League against Manchester United. And that for me was a sign that I am getting old.
Brother, you're about to clock 30 now.
First of all, let's slow down.
In fact, you don't clock 30, Abi.
Let's slow down. Let's slow down.
No, I haven't.
Let's slow down.
Are you 29?
Yeah.
Yeah, young boy. Young man.
Today has been a very interesting day. This person also, in the match between NEC and AZ Alkmaar, Bas Dost almost died.
What?
Bas Dost collapsed on the pitch and died. I don't even think they finished that match. Let me check if they finished that match.
Oh, man.
He collapsed on the pitch and the people once declared him dead initially.
Wait, what?
What's up with players collapsing on the pitch?
Trust me. Yep. The match didn't end. The match was abandoned. The match was abandoned at the very last. Like, Bas Dost scored and assisted, though. They were winning AZ Alkmaar. And the hero of the team just collapsed casually. And the match was abandoned. They couldn't continue playing after that. Actually, we have to confirm that Bas Dost is good.
He's doing well. He's doing well. BBC.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
See the players crying.
Baba. Meanwhile, they want to add more games, play more football, man. Okay.
Meanwhile, our boy in Ghana was robbed.
Man, I don't know about Rob Shaw. I think it's something about, it's more to do with boxing restructuring their points scoring system. Because if you're talking about as a boxer, then Fury had the more thing. Yeah, exactly. Fury outbox
jabs, more clean connection.
Yeah, but if you now talk about impact, damage, then it was obviously Ngannou. Ngannou was fresh out of that fight. You know, and Fury was busted, bro. He played
for points. After Ngannou knocked him down, he just played for points.
Yep. And even then, he wasn't even confident.
Actually, I think it was their contract that Fury was going to win that fight because of the Usyk one.
No. It's not a WBA sanctioned bout. So nobody's title is on the line. So even if Fury lost, he would still be the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be an undisputed clash.
Okay, maybe all those things start coming into play. I don't know if there'll be a bit of an embarrassment to it because obviously you're the heavyweight champion of the world, but you lost to somebody.
The boxer in the world can beat you. And the first game you now lose. It's not a good look.
I'm not even thinking about it from Fury's point of view anymore. I'm just thinking about it from Ngannou's. What next from Ngannou? Because obviously Fury now wants to fight Usyk. But what are the chances of Ngannou beating them, Anthony Joshua, now? I would say pretty good.
I would say he goes in now as a favorite.
Yep. Not even favorite, right? As we speak now, I'm sure that guy will knock out that Joshua. And that's embarrassing, man.
Ngannou is a different breed. His story is different.